Welcome to the Becoming Superhuman podcast. My name is Dr. Nirvani Umadat. I've spent years working as a dentist and researcher. I've traveled all over the world, and I've built a business that has allowed me to help thousands of people. I've studied conventional, ancient, and spiritual sciences. And through these studies, I've realized merging science with spirituality is necessary for us to understand who we are. I'm here to help you up-level your life, mind, body, soul, and become your own version of superhuman. Are you breathing wrong? Have you ever thought about whether or not you're breathing correctly? In today's episode, I'm going to discuss how breathing correctly could be the single biggest upgrade you make to your life. And I'll talk about some practical steps you can take so that in this coming year, you literally start to breathe new life into your body. So why am I taking the time today to talk about breath and breathing? And for most people, when they hear the idea that breathing could be done wrong, that doesn't even register, because breathing for almost all of us is something we don't think about, happens reliably and consistently and relatively passively. Like, it's just something that we do all day long throughout our day and don't really put any intention or conscious effort into, and really just expect that it's going to continue happening the way it always has for us. But our experience of our life in this human body begins with the first breath that we take, and it will end with our last breath. There's nothing here on earth that breathes that we don't consider to be living. And there is nothing that is living here on earth that doesn't breathe. And so this force of our breath is not only pivotal for life and our experience of the human body, but it's also our connection to spirit and this God force that we move from the universe, from the atmosphere around us, in through our bodies, and then it permeates every single cell inside of us. And when we exhale or when we release our breath, we move things that are no longer serving us or that have been built up inside of us as excess out of our body and back into the atmosphere. And so the breath is something that isn't only a sign of life and vitality, but it's also our direct connection to source or spirit or God, you know, this force of existence outside of us that we can't necessarily see, but that we draw in and we allow into our bodies. And without it, we wouldn't exist as the full of life, living beings that we actually are. So that's why I think that focusing this discussion on the breath, breathing, and how we can optimize how we do this is so important, especially at this particular time when we're coming into a new year. And as we move into this new year, I think on a collective level, we as a people, we as humanity, are ready to birth a version of existence that celebrates health and wellness and abundance and strength and allowing. And when I think of the breath, even from a more spiritual or metaphysical perspective, I think of it as the ultimate form of allowing. It is a way that we, in every moment of our day, are surrendering into this feeling of allowance, where there's no force, there's no direction, there's no hardened intention around our breath. It just happens, and it consistently happens to serve us and give us life. And, you know, the breath eases in to us. It settles into each one of our 100 trillion cells that make up who we are. And it's then carried into each one of those cells, and they use it for hundreds of trillions of things that are happening inside of our body at any given second of the day that we aren't thinking about. So there are all of these chemical interactions, there are all of these processes of energy generation and toxin expulsion and on and on and on. And I won't go into every single detail of cellular biology here, but the point is that our body is using the breath, it's using the oxygen that we're taking in. And without our even thinking of it or really knowing all of the details of what's going on, it's converting that into something that is life-giving, life force generating, and a really beautiful expression of the energy of allowing for creation to occur. So that is where I think the power of our breath really lies, and why it's so important to make it a point to start focusing on this as we come in to this new year and we perhaps set new goals for ourselves, we set new intentions for our lives. I think coming back to something as fundamental as how are we breathing and how is this serving us in our life? And are we using this gift of source consciousness flowing into our bodies, giving us this innate power of life that resides inside of each and every one of us? And are we taking that gift and using it to its highest potential to eventually become versions of ourselves that allow us to live into our highest potential? So that's what I would like to talk about today. And that's why I think that this is such an incredibly important yet overlooked topic that I'm excited to dive into. So is there even a wrong way to breathe? That sounds like a funny question because, as I just said, most people don't even think about breathing. It's something that, for all intents and purposes, just happens. But breathing, like anything else, can be done in a way that optimizes your health, and we'll call that the right way or an optimal way. And it can be done in a way that doesn't, like it can just be done. The other thing is that if you're not breathing well during the day, so while you're awake, you're aware, you're up, you're doing your day, you're doing life. If you're not breathing well during these times, I mean, you may notice shortness of breath, but eventually your body compensates for, you know, your poor breathing quality just so that you can get through your day. And then the mechanisms that your body has used to compensate for how you breathe, that becomes your baseline, or it becomes your new norm. And over time, you don't even notice anymore. So if you're not breathing well, you're running around, you notice that you're not feeling great, shortness of breath, generally for most people, as their bodies start recognizing that they need to compensate for that lack of oxygen, that lack of energy that you're experiencing, that happens. The compensation happens in many different ways. We'll go over some of them. But because you're now compensating, you don't overly notice anymore that you're not taking in the level of oxygen that would be ideal for you. You're not generating the amount of energy that would be ideal for you. And overall, as far as how you function, you're not functioning as optimally as you could be if you were doing those things. So, how are some ways, or what are some ways that your body will compensate for poor breathing during the day when you're awake? And there are a number of ways, and I'm not going to go into every single one of them today. I'll outline some obvious ones or some ones that I think are easy to identify in your everyday routine, but just know that your mouth, your airway, your nose, like this whole area here is connected to the rest of your body. And not only is your head and neck making compensations for your breathing, but those compensations have a ripple effect throughout the rest of your entire body. So from my perspective as a dentist, one of the ways that I often see compensation happening in patients is their jaws tend to shift, or they develop habits of grinding. And why would this happen if you weren't breathing correctly? Like, what does grinding have to do with how you breathe? So if we think about what teeth grinding is it's your teeth trying to find a stable position against one another, so grinding against each other. But what that actually does is it repositions the lower jaw against the upper jaw. So most of us, including many dentists, just assume that your upper jaw is totally fixed, and it is fixed to the base of your skull after a certain point in your general development or general growth, but it happens much later than most people assume. So it's usually around 14 to 16 for boys and girls before that area between the maxillary or top jaw and the base of the skull is completely fused. But for most people, most adults who experience grinding, those bones are stable, they're fused, and mainly you're getting movement of your lower jaw against your upper jaw. So you get this teeth grinding where the lower jaw is constantly shifting. And what that does as a way to improve breathing is it moves the lower jaw out of the way, usually forward, moves it forward, and creates more space in the airway behind the jaw. So the area where air tends to move through the nose and the back of the throat, the pharynx, and then eventually moves down into your trachea, your windpipe, and it'll go through your larynx first. But this whole area where air is moving from outside, inside, down into the lungs, it becomes constricted back here to start with. Actually, it can become constricted in the sinuses to start with. But, you know, as far as jaw movement is concerned, when you clench and grind, or grind specifically, when you grind and move the jaw out of the way, most people with airway issues or breathing issues are doing that so that they create the more space to get that lower jaw moved forward. It's no longer pushing on the back of the throat. And because you don't have that obstruction in the back of the throat, the idea is that your body is actually trying to clear some space to get more air back there. So that grinding action has many effects on your head and your your neck and obviously the jaw itself. I think many people are familiar with TMJ issues or TMJ disorders, like where you hear clicking, popping, grinding in the temporomandibular joints and TMJs. But beyond that, it affects how you bite. It affects how you chew. For many people, it affects the type of foods that they can chew and the types of things that they can enjoy eating. And it affects also the muscle tone in your around your jaw and in your face overall. In your neck, that goes down to the trapezius, the shoulders, that can move into the back and the chest. So as I said earlier, there's this ripple effect of what's happening in your face, your head and jaw area is now moving throughout the body. And we have a whole connective tissue system called the fascial system. And that is an incredibly complex dynamic network that exists throughout the entire body as well. And when there is tightness or tension in the fascial system, there is constriction in the muscles that the fascia surrounds. That can translate into constriction in organs or cartilage or other tissues within the body. And so over time, you get through the compensation of your body trying to get more air into it. You get things shifting in non-ideal ways, like rather than, your jaw, your head, aspects of your neck just kind of passively sitting where they're supposed to, you're now doing these very likely subconscious but very active things, exercising different joints, different muscle groups, different fascial systems, and all of these things that are really activated all the time become tight and tense and constricted. And you get this tightness that is underlying what you just look at to be very obviously your face and your mouth and your jaw. Like those are the obvious things that you see. And if you're not really impaired as far as what you're able to eat, you may not even notice that there is a lot of tightness and tension going on. But what happens is over time, these compensation mechanisms, they tighten up, they shift things, they move things. And as that moves throughout the rest of your body, you start to experience pain or misalignment in other areas. And I was just listening to a myofunctional therapist, and this is somebody who specifically works with people trying to release some of the tension in the muscles around the jaw. And she was saying that a lot of jaw issues in adults, specifically women, but I mean, this is not isolated to women, but people who have jaw issues, misalignments in the jaw, tension in the jaw, and inability to open or use their mouth fully, also have misalignments, tension, shifting, pain, very symptomatic in the hip area as well. And this is for many reasons, but one of them is that fascial system I was talking about a little while ago and how this connects from all areas of your body to other areas of your body. So we're talking about the head and neck right now, but this moves throughout your entire body all the way down to other areas that have the ability to kind of shift and in a compensatory way move so that you can function in what you think is a normal way. It may actually be abnormal and non-ideal, but it allows you to kind of do your day, these ways of movement subtly inside of you that you don't overly notice that things are changing. And then when you live like that, you know, day after day, month after month, year after year, you don't even really notice anymore until something pretty bad happens. So that's usually associated with pain or an extreme lack of mobility. And in my world, what that translates to for a lot of people is jaw pain, breathing issues or airway issues, or an impact on what they can or can no longer eat. So how does this even happen? How do we end up breathing wrong? And for all of us, this is something that we need to consider, because most people don't just wake up one day as full-grown adults who all of a sudden don't breathe well. This starts in childhood. It starts as children. And so for anyone who either was a child or who has children, this would be of interest, because these adult airway issues or breathing problems or lack of breathing that exist for a large part of society. And just as a side note here, the rate at which North American society is now experiencing, these are diagnosed cases of sleep apnea. So that's where you are breathing poorly, or in some cases not breathing at all while you sleep, is 1 in 5. So 20% of adults are experiencing some kind of sleep disordered breathing. And that translates into a whole slew of other things that are going on while you're sleeping, but also while you're awake. So that just gives you a sense of how prevalent this is for our society. And, you know, it doesn't start for most people as something that just happens one day in adulthood. It begins in our childhood, and it begins for our kids while they're still kids. So the two main reasons, and there are many reasons, like with anything, there are a lot of layers to this, but there are two main reasons that sort of across the board for anyone who is in the airway world are accepted reasons for why this is happening. One is our diets, and two is our environments. So I'm going to go into that a little bit more, but what do I mean by our diets? So most of our diets now, and specifically in the Western world, but this is actually across the board, our diets have changed significantly because the advent of processed food manufacturing has moved throughout the world. It's not isolated to just North America. It just happens to be particularly bad here in North America. But what do processed foods have in them? What do they not have in them is nutrients. That's one issue. But also, they tend to have a long shelf life and have ingredients in them that keep them sort of soft, on the softer side, on the more easily chewable side. And I mean, that is even in processed foods that we consume as adults. But if we even think about what's available as processed baby food, and, you know, this is where these issues start, is for our kids as babies or as infants. And as a baby, if you're not breastfeeding, a lot of bottles that, you know, you could be giving to your baby don't necessarily require them to suck or use that sucking mechanism in the same way as if they were breastfeeding. So that is initially a really good way to activate some of the jaw muscles that are, you know, obviously underdeveloped in babies and create some pressure and some tension around the bones of the jaw, so the maxilla and the mandible. And the bones of the skull are not fused completely in babies, and that takes time. Some areas, we call them sutures, fuse more quickly than others. But one of the things that that sucking motion does, and that tension that gets placed on the jaw and on the face, is that it instigates the development of those bones, the musculature around the bones, and over time, the growth of the face. Because when you have movement of the bones in the skull, one of the ways that the face grows is to actually fill in any of the gaps that get created between the bones. And those are called, as I said, sutures. So basically, when we're babies, our bones are not completely fused and hardened and really, really hard and calcified. That happens over time, but the bones in babies and children are really pliable. And that's one of the reasons orthodontics or braces, movement of the teeth, is done typically at a younger age, because you have this flexibility within the bone that you can leverage to create changes. So to go back to, you know, how does this all start? One thing, as I said, is the lack of that suctioning motion that we're getting with a lot of store-bought bottles. Then we move into possibly more quote-unquote solid foods, and yet a lot of the solid foods that have been manufactured, and even in some of the books that have been written about how to actually feed infants, do recommend foods that are still yet quite soft. So when you're not actively putting a lot of energy into chewing and breaking down food, once again, the activation of the jaws, the bones of the jaws that are actively involved in chewing, and the musculature around the bones that are involved in, you know, holding the jaw in a certain position, releasing the jaw out of that position, actively breaking food down, all of these things, they just don't get the same kind of, you know, exercise, if you want to think of it that way, versus if we were all eating foods that, you know, our ancestors had been eating at relatively the same time. Processed foods or manufactured foods have given us this convenience and ease, but what's happened is that our muscle tone and our muscle capabilities have lessened over time. And so we've developed this laxity in how we actually are able to position our jaw, because those muscles that are responsible for the jaw being positioned in an ideal place just don't have the same level of strength that they would have had 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So that carries on into adulthood, and, you know, whatever happens when you're a child, that doesn't just go away. You don't just grow out of it. And we end up being adults that have issues that have been caused by, you know, poor muscle tone as children. So diet is a big one. And, you know, we eat processed foods as adults as well. It's just that all of that happening as children in our lives kind of sets us up for a situation where, you know, that lack of muscle tone continues on into adulthood. The inability to chew certain foods for some people continues into adulthood. And the longer you use something, the more likely it is to wear if it is not being maintained in a really harmonious, ideal way. And if you're already kind of stacking poor muscle tone, poor jaw posture, poor tongue position, you know, all of these things, one on top of the other, on top of the other, you end up with adults who continue to have these same problems. So the second thing I had mentioned is environments. And so what do I mean by environments? Literally our environment on a regular day-to-day basis. So we now are inside, indoors most of the day. Many of us are in confined buildings that probably don't have great circulation or ventilation systems. So whether that be daycares, schools, offices, we're kind of stuck inside. And we are surrounded by toxins and allergens that exist in our environments and that are not being reliably and actively cleared. So for a lot of kids, and again, this starts in childhood, we do have a lot of kids that have allergies. And what does that mean? That means that their sinuses and their whole breathing system is inflamed, constantly being attacked, constantly being irritated. And that means ultimately that they're not breathing well through their noses. You know, you've got kids with stuffy noses, and the way they compensate for that is mouth breathing. So now instead of breathing through your nose, we have kids breathing through their mouths. And again, that turns into adults breathing through their mouths. But why is that so important? Like, why is mouth breathing so detrimental to how we eventually end up breathing as adults and really to how our whole face and airway develop? Like, the fact that we have people who regularly default to mouth breathing and who are not using their airway as fully and capably as they should be is a problem for breathing, but it's also a problem for overall facial development. So is there a way that we're supposed to breathe properly, where we position things in our face so that we actually execute a proper breath? And the answer is yes. And what that looks like is it looks like having your mouth closed. So not mouth breathing. You are exclusively breathing through the nasal passage, the nostrils and the nasal passage. And that air is going back into the nasopharynx. So we're not mouth breathing. We're nose breathing for an ideal breath. Your lips are closed. Your lower jaw is lightly, the teeth of the lower jaw lightly touching the teeth of the upper jaw, and your tongue is relaxed. It fits nicely within the arch of your bottom teeth, meaning that you don't feel your tongue is too big for your mouth. You don't feel that your tongue is spilling over your teeth. Like, your tongue ideally should fit in that arch of your lower teeth. So mouth is closed. Tongue is just lightly pushing up against the roof of your mouth, your hard palate. And then you know, when you breathe, you take a deep breath in. That just passes really naturally and passively through the airway. So you don't have to force it in. You don't have to really push your tongue to get a breath through. You don't want to push it up, push it forward. You just want to be able to really passively sit, close your mouth, have your tongue touch the roof of your mouth, have your teeth lightly touching. You don't want to force your teeth closed. You don't want to have to feel like you need to pull them open, and your breath passively flows in and out. So that is a nice, normal breath. So I'll just go over that again so everyone can kind of understand the steps or the components of a normal breath. But mouth closed, breathing through your nose only, teeth lightly touching, tongue up against the roof of your mouth passively. So you're not pushing it up there. It's just resting up there. And then you're able to, without a whole lot of effort, breathe in and out. So you don't have to force that. So that is how a normal breath looks. And if your facial muscle tone and the bones in your face have developed properly, that should be easy. Like, you shouldn't even have to think about doing that. If you have had irregular or not ideal development of the muscles in your face and the bones in your face, those things won't be as easy. And you probably don't breathe that way. Or, you know, as a child, if whatever compensation mechanisms you're currently using to breathe properly continue, as an adult, you end up as a person not breathing well. So why is it important that all of these things come together? Like, why is the position of your teeth important for your breath? Why is the position of your tongue important for your breath? Why is it important to just have your breathing be easy, not stressful? And the reason is, it goes all the way back to anatomy and how things develop. And what I would ask you to do is, if you're listening to this, you can't see me, but you can follow along. It's pretty easy. But if you just imagine or actively do it with me, drop your lower jaw open. So just let your mouth hang open. What happens? So now your mouth is hanging open. So some obvious things that happen is your lower jaw is now low. It's now lower than it normally is, right? Your muscles supporting that lower jaw don't have the same muscle tone. Like, they're kind of all lax. You don't have the same muscle tone under the jaw. Everything feels sort of soft down there. Your face is obviously longer. Now that your jaw is hanging open, your face is longer. And your mid-face, so the area around your cheeks here, is not as full. And then some other things that happen are, if you kind of exists this way, and this is how you breathe, over time your mouth gets dry. Breathing with your mouth open causes dryness in your mouth. That changes the chemistry of your saliva and the quality and communities of bacteria in your mouth, and that I'll leave aside for now, but those are other effects of kind of existing like this. The other thing that's happened is now my tongue, or your tongue, has dropped down as well. So when you're regularly closed, your tongue should actually be sitting passively against the hard palate, the roof of your mouth. So I've kind of dropped everything down, elongated my face, taken volume out of the mid face. Everything is longer now. And when we're developing, so when the jaw and the facial skeletal structure is developing, it requires some guidance from the tongue. It actually plays a really important part in how our skeletal structure of our face develops. And if our, because we're not breathing well, so, you know, if we have low muscle tone because we're eating foods that aren't really strengthening our muscles, if we constantly have allergens that are stuffing our noses up, we're not able to breathe well through our noses, we're defaulting to breathing through the mouth. and we're a child and, you know, our whole system is growing and changing and looking for guidance into what are we eventually going to grow into. And just for anyone who is interested, I will link this in the show notes. But this book, it's called Jaws, is an excellent reference for the things that I'm talking about today. It has a lot of good photos in it. And with regard to, you know, how what we eat actually affects how we develop, this book that was written in the 1930s, it was actually the research for it was done throughout the 1920s and the 1930s, and then it was published in the 1930s, so 100 years ago. But it's called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And this is a really good book to just highlight how eating processed food, and processed food has existed for 100 years, it existed in the 1930s, but how eating processed food can actually change our health and the shape of our jaws, the shape of our faces, where our teeth sit in our jaw, you know, how crowded teeth develop, how changes in your jaw size affect the ability of your teeth to come into the proper location, and then ultimately for you to be able to have a good stable bite. So those I will put in the show notes, but those are good references. But to go back to the idea of mouth breathing and what that does, so you have a child who is looking for guidance in how to grow, and they're kind of breathing like this now to get enough air into their airway, but everything has dropped. Like, they've got this long face, their jaw is lower jaw is lower than it needs to be, their tongue is lower than it should be, and so they don't have that pressure against the hard palate. And your maxilla, so your top jaw, and your hard palate are actually two bones. So we think of it as one jaw bone. It is two bones that fuse together in the middle. So I'll do this for anyone who's watching. But the pressure of the tongue against the hard palate when we're children, it allows for this sort of pressurized, this passively pressurized state where those bones come together in this really uniform arch. So the tongue is somewhat rounded on top, and it serves as this really good scaffold to kind of tell those bones how to eventually fuse together so that you get this curvature of your maxilla or your upper jaw that ideally allows for future growth and development so that the teeth that will come into the upper jaw have enough room, and then they can come down in a proper position. And then that positioning of the tongue against the palate also serves as a guide. So if you just kind of push your tongue up against the palate, your tongue can guide the growth of the maxilla, your upper jaw, forward as well. So it guides your maxilla to grow out and forward. That also helps to guide your mandible or your lower jaw, so that your lower jaw, and if you're biting properly, the teeth of your lower jaw fit inside the teeth of your upper jaw. And so the growth of your maxilla will help to dictate the growth of your mandible. And so you want this whole area to kind of to grow out a little bit and then forward. And what that does is that gives you a nice amount of room in your airway behind the jaws. When that doesn't happen, so now we have the case of somebody who's mouth breathing, as an example. They're, as I said, everything's kind of long. That tongue is not pushing against the palate. So I said earlier that it's actually two bones that make up your top jaw, your maxilla. And so when you have nothing directing that growth, like that tongue is not up there pushing against the maxilla, telling it how to grow, it tends to grow kind of like this. So those bones, because there's no pressure on them, they kind of collapse down a little bit. And then you get this like vaulted or highly arched palate, which instead of looking like this, it looks more like this. And this is more constricted now, right? So your palate or your top jaw should be a certain width. And because you haven't had that growth training from the tongue, it gets collapsed. It's not as wide. So your jaw obviously is not as wide as it is supposed to be. But now you also have this collapsed, less volumized midface. Like you don't have as much here. This is your top jaw, your maxilla. But that whole area is less voluminous than it's supposed to be. And then if you don't have the tongue pressure helping to move the top jaw forward as well, it doesn't move out as much. So you end up having this more elongated, less full maxilla or upper jaw area. And then because the maxilla is moved down and not necessarily out, to try and match it, your lower jaw also moves down. So neither one of them is really moving out. They're both moving down. You end up with a longer face, less full face, muscles that are more lax, like don't have the same strength to hold everything together because they haven't had to do that. And you end up with a more constricted airway because you haven't moved out as much. You've moved more down. So you basically end up with somebody with a longer, less full face and a more constricted airway. And then what happens when we sleep is now we've taken this person who is kind of like this, you know, their face is long, their jaw is low, their lower jaw is low. And now if you've been doing this with me, hang your mouth open and tilt your head back like you're sleeping. So I'm like this. So what happens? Your lower jaw shifts back, it falls back. So I just said that a person with their jaw longer or lower than it ideally should be already has very likely some form of constricted airway. And now you take that person and you lay them back, and that's what we all do when we sleep, and their lower jaw is now pushing back against their airway even more. So you have somebody with a constricted airway who can't breathe well to begin with, goes to sleep, get some peace and rest, and their jaw pushes back into their airway and they can't breathe well. And they don't breathe well all night and they don't get a restful sleep. Some people wake up multiple times in the middle of the night. Some people, as I mentioned earlier with apnea, completely stop breathing. Like they just entirely stop breathing multiple times throughout the night. And many people wake up not feeling rested because they haven't been resting and they haven't been breathing properly and they haven't been taking in air properly. And one of the ways that this is compensated for is, again, is grinding. Or sometimes that's clenching, like your jaw will try and clench into a position where it shifts forward far enough that it can open up the airway back here and try and get some air in there. But these are things that sort of just keep piling on to one another. So what do we do about it? Like, this is all the stuff that is not so great and all of the reasons that we're not breathing well. How do we fix this? So one question might be, you know, I was told by my dentist that I grind and I'm going to have a night guard made, or I've had a night guard made. Is that enough? And this is mainly for adults. Well, the night guard will protect your teeth. Like, it's an acrylic appliance that fits over your teeth, and it will very literally stop you from grinding teeth on teeth. You're now grinding teeth on acrylic. So it's going to protect wear on your teeth. Will it stop you from clenching or grinding? No, because what it will do is it will possibly retrain your bite to some degree, depending on how it's made. It will protect your teeth from wear. But if your grinding is caused because your airway is obstructed and your jaw in your state of sleep is trying to basically open up space so that you can get more air into your airway here, no, a night guard just sitting over your teeth is not going to help that issue. Some people have been told that all they need is braces, or all their children need are braces to reposition the teeth and stabilize the bite, and that's going to help, you know, clenching, grinding, facial development. And most orthodontists are trained to move teeth, not necessarily trained in restructuring skeletal development and retraining muscle function. So the amount of training as a dentist or a dental specialist that we get in nutrition, environmental factors that affect breathing quality, sleep disordered breathing, and eventually overall facial aesthetics is zero. So these are not things that any general dentist learns, or even an orthodontist learns. Like, these are things that you have to go for specialized training after the fact to really get a good understanding of. So if you have been told by your dentist that you need a night guard, or that you need braces, or you need Invisalign, or you need some form of tooth movement, and that's going to solve your problems, don't be upset at your dentist. They are giving you the information that they learned. Like, that's literally what they learned in school. And unless you're specifically going to myofunctional courses and orthopedic courses for dentistry, you are not going to learn a lot of this information. So they are telling you through no fault of their own. It's just a limited amount of knowledge that they have, the things that they know. However, I am saying that there are ways to circumvent these things from happening in children that eventually become lifelong issues. So I'm going to start with, what can you do if you have a child that is suffering from these things? Like, what does that look like? And what can you do as a parent? And then if you're an adult and you believe that you have these issues, what can you do? So let's go to kids first. So what does it look like when a child is having trouble breathing? So one thing that might be obvious is a tongue thrust. So that's where their tongue kind of pushing against their teeth constantly. And usually it's their lower teeth. Their tongue is pushing against their lower teeth. So why is that happening? So it could be a few different reasons, one of which is, you know, I just mentioned the overall kind of growth of the jaws. And when your jaws don't grow to match the musculature, your tongue is a very big muscle, very strong muscle in your body, but it's a big muscle in your mouth. And when your lower jaw hasn't grown to sort of fit the tongue, sometimes very obviously and truthfully, the tongue doesn't fit within the bone itself, like within the jaw. And so it kind of looks like it's spilling out. There's not enough room for it. So that could be one thing, one issue. And then two, as I was just talking about, you know, if the lower jaw is pushed back or kind of falling back, it constricts the airway. So for a child, it might actually feel good to do this, push their lower jaw forward, push it out of the way of their airway, and that helps them breathe better. And they're obviously not able to articulate that to you, but that is actually what they're doing physiologically so that they can get more air. So those are some things to look for. Also, if your child, so in a child's mouth, you should see lots of space between the teeth. If you are not seeing spaces develop between your child's teeth, it's very likely that there's not enough jaw growth and room for the baby teeth that they currently have, and certainly won't be for their adult teeth. So if you don't have proper adequate spacing between the baby teeth, which are smaller than adult teeth, obviously, you're not going to have enough room for the adult teeth when they come in. So that's another thing to look out for. And what can be done about this? So there are many exercises that are available. There is one in particular. It's and there are GOPEX certified therapists. Again, it's in this book that I just referenced, JAWS, but I will put a link or a reference in the show notes as well. But a GOPEX therapist can actually do an assessment and then provide some useful exercises for children, but for anyone. And it does some retraining of oral posture. So basically, you know, how are their jaws positioned? How is their head positioned? How is their neck positioned? Like, what does that look like as overall body posture? Those things are all important. And that is something that may be worth looking into if your child is developing some of these compensation mechanisms and you're noticing it. That's one thing that you can do. Also, you know, consider what you're feeding them. I mean, what their level of ability is to chew and consume food. But, you know, are you throwing some harder to chew, stiffer, crunchier things in their chewy foods that require some, you know, muscle activity? Or is everything that they're eating pretty soft, you know, safe, not very difficult for them to chew because that's easier for them? Well, it's actually, you know, as far as their facial development and airway development goes, that over time does a disservice. So changing up the actual texture of foods is important for your child as well. Now, if you're an adult, what can you do? Now you're in this stage of your life, you've got poor breathing, you've got poor sleeping. I'm sure all of that is frustrating. Like, how do you combat that now at this point? So for you as well, it's important to also be really aware of the foods that you're eating. And I can understand that if you already have jaw issues, eating certain foods can be difficult. You know, there are probably certain things that you can't eat. And I would say try as best you can to mix up what you're eating and put some texturized foods into your diet. Get some things into your mouth and into your chewing routine that require more strength and require more exercise as far as actually using your muscles to chew. So that's one thing. I would also say be incredibly mindful of how you are chewing. So chew your food fully. Like, don't swallow pieces of food. I mean, chew, and if you want to put a number on it, chew each mouthful of food at least 20 times. Actually count it out for yourself so that you get into a routine of using your muscles as fully as you possibly can to break down food and really activating, they're called the muscles of mastication, but activating the muscles responsible for chewing. So be intentional about what you eat and the texture of foods that you're eating, how you chew those foods. And then there was a trend and is a trend in the biohacking community called mouth taping. And there are a lot of people that have said that this has done wonders for them as far as the way they look and their sleep quality. And the real reason that mouth taping works is because you literally tape your mouth shut. And so if you are somebody who over time has developed that mouth breathing, open mouth, mouth hanging open, compensation mechanism, like that's how you breathe now. The mouth taping shuts your mouth. You've taped it shut. You are now forced to breathe through your nose, which is what you want. That's ideal breathing. Your tongue is pushed up against the roof of your mouth, your palate. So that's where it's supposed to be. You over time do that all passively. Like you've taped your mouth shut. You're not breathing through your mouth. Your tongue is resting against the palate. You're now breathing through your nose. And you train the positioning of your jaws. Your teeth are lightly together. You train the positioning of your jaws to sit against one another in a way where you actually stabilize however much room you're going to have given your current physiology for your airway. So basically, you kind of stabilize the jaws against each other and the musculature in your face and jaw so that you're optimizing how much air can get into your airway. That's why mouth taping works for people and is something that you can do as an adult. It's also something that you can do with children. I know it seems a little scarier to, you know, think about taping your child's mouth shut. And I would do that under the guidance of a therapist that you're working with. But mouth taping works, and that is, it's a retraining tool to sort of signal to your body how you're going to change how you breathe. So that's why it's effective. Having said all of that, I want to leave a link or resource available for you to the American Academy of Physiological Medicine and Dentistry. And if you follow that link and anything here has resonated for you and you feel like you need more information about where to find a doctor or a therapist who can help you or your child, there is a whole list of people available within North America on the website, and many of them are available to work virtually or remotely. So don't let location be a limiting factor for you. But I hope that with all of this information, you are now able to walk away feeling empowered about how to look better, feel better, function better, and breathe better, because breathing, how you breathe, is how you do life. It is literally a reflection of your life. If you're not breathing well and your breath is life, you're not living well. So let's really focus our energy, our intention, our will on what are the things that I can do immediately to improve my life. And I promise you, if you start breathing better, you'll start feeling better, you'll start functioning better, you'll start looking better, and your life will be better. Thank you for listening to this episode. And if this was informative or helpful for you, please give the show a like or a 5-star review. That helps. All of it helps. I appreciate you. Thank you for your time today. And I look forward to speaking with you on the next episode.